Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal.
And I'm Todd Wilson, the regional president for Greater Los Angeles for PNC Bank.
Each episode, we have an opportunity to sit down with leaders who've built, scaled, or reimagined companies. These are the people and the companies who are shaping the way Los Angeles does business.
And today, you will hear the story of one of the biggest family-owned companies you may never have heard of. Grandfather immigrating to the U.S., a father taking over, and ultimately a son taking a business back over on behalf of the family and building it into one of the largest security companies in the industry. Intercon is the rare billion-dollar company that remains 100% family-owned. They protect Fortune 500 companies, government agencies, and high-profile clients throughout the world.
It began as a small family business. And today, under third-generation leadership, Intercon has grown to become one of the largest security companies in the world with more than 40,000 employees across the globe.
Along the way, it became a story of legacy, innovation, doing what you say you were going to do, and leading a company at the crossroads of security and technology.
Our guest today is carrying his family's legacy forward while making his own mark as president and CEO of Intercon Security. Henry Hernandez, welcome to C-Speak.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. What a cool opportunity, and just to be considered with so many of the guests that you've had is really personally very gratifying. Nice to talk to you today.
So, all right, Intercon, it's a multi-generational family business. It was founded by your grandparents and then initially scaled by your father. As the third generation of leadership, you and your current team, you've taken the company to new levels. You're now past the billion-dollar mark. Congratulations on that. That's a huge accomplishment. What was it like to step into the role, coming in with new ideas, but also trying to respect the company's history and the company's culture? How did you do that?
Well, thank you. Really has been an exciting whirlwind of a ride. I couldn't be more proud of what the team has done. Like you said, it's about a team of people that have worked together and built something really exciting. If you know our family history, that my grandparents are family of immigrants who came to the United States from Mexico. My grandpa dropped out of high school to fight in the Korean War, then joined the LAPD, did 20 years with the LAPD, earned his pension, and then took his life savings to found a security company, which ended up becoming Intercon. And so to have someone who had very little formal education, but incredible business skills and intuition and hard work, to then see that grow to today has just been one of the cooler American dream kind of life stories that you could have. Growing up with Intercon, it was like a sibling, right? This was the family business that put our family in the position that we were in America. It was something that we talked about at the kitchen table, just so proud of what my father and my grandfather had done. And then I think like any family business, we had the same kind of dynamics that you might have when it comes to succession planning. You know, my father has had great success outside of Intercon. And as part of that was in a position where he had to bring in an outside management team. You know, really unfortunate, maybe misalignment of incentives, maybe kind of wrong culture, that kind of thing. The family and the business found themselves in a position where the company was just not doing well. We'd become kind of rudderless, stale. And so I had the opportunity, I was 29, I was working as a corporate attorney in New York City, to come in. And the thought wasn't so much to reinvent the business, but it was more, hey, how can we go back to the future? Right? We have a great brand, we have a great model. What's lacked is leadership, structure, you know, accountability. Fast forward to where we are, 100% family owned. We're doing $1.3 billion in revenue, growing very quickly. And it's really just a testament to the team that had come before me and then the team we've been able to build today, running similar to what my grandfather and father ran, but at much larger scale.
So you talked a bit about the history of the company and obviously the importance of culture, both in the beginning and now. You guys have tripled in size over the last 5 years with you at the helm. What's been your philosophy and how did you scale so thoughtfully while maintaining the culture and the principles that made you successful?
It's been a really exciting time. You know, we're kind of the one of the more exciting stories in our industry right now. Inc. named us one of the fastest growing companies in America a couple years in a row now. And the way they measure is by percentage. You know, so we're putting pretty big percentage numbers up despite starting from a good number. And the way we've been able to do that, I think there's really two things. One, like any company, I had seen us scale. When I started, we were doing something like $350 million of revenue. And today to be sitting where we are has been, you know, a great accomplishment for the whole team. But I really think when we've thought about our scale and our ability to scale, it's really been three factors. One, is there an opportunity in the market? We've been very lucky that some of the big players in our market have had some quality control concerns and maybe not been able to meet the kind of upper end, the quality side of the security industry. The second is, do you have the ability to scale? And so we've been able to build a fantastic tech solution on the back end that I can talk about a little bit more later, that really it's kind of like an Uber of security type model. Hmm. Building that with people, with the right incentives, the right structure, the right alignment, certainly the cultural alignment. That's that second point. And then the third is, do you have the capital to scale? Right, Todd, you obviously know a lot about this coming from the banking side, but there are a lot of companies, I think, that have the opportunity and maybe the ability, but lack the capital. And so for us to be able to scale to our current size while maintaining 100% ownership is actually one of the things I'm most proud of. That culture of family ownership, commitment, long-term, you know, investment, as opposed to kind of short-term turnaround. You know, I don't have LPs that I have to return funds to in the next couple of years. By virtue of that, we've been able to put those three things together and take a long-term view of what we want to do and say, hey, we're going to take market share over a multi-decade perspective at this point, and try to become one of the big guys without actually having to sell portions of ourselves to achieve the capital flexibility to get there.
I think that's so important. And I'm looking at you as a leader, okay? Henry, you were recognized as one of EY's entrepreneurs of the year. That's actually where I met you for the first time.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. And today you're on the other side of the table, so to speak, as a judge. What lessons or maybe mindset shifts do you believe are most important for those out who are trying to build and wanting to scale a successful business?
Being on the other side of this judging table now has been really cool just to see some of these stories. I mean, there are a lot of fantastic stories of businesses in Los Angeles. I mean, the backbone of what we're doing in the US is entrepreneurship and growth and betting on ourselves. And so the mindset for me that maybe has done the most work, and really learning this from my father and my grandfather, is look, it's betting on yourselves, right? So we're all human. You get that imposter syndrome when you're sitting in some of these rooms and talking to clients. We had the opportunity to take over all of the security work for the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. That's all of the airports, the World Trade Center, the PATH systems, a humongous program, 9 figures a year of revenue, thousands of people.
Not to mention significant importance of the work.
It's highly visible, right? Yeah. You're sitting in that room and you're thinking, do I have the opportunity? Well, yes, I'm in the room. Do I have the ability? Well, I think so. Do I have the capital to do this? Oh man, I sure hope so, right? And so there were times certainly where you're sitting in bed late at night saying, is this possible? And now fast forward 5 years later, you take over the program, you're staffing every post from day one, you know, you're winning awards for the work you're putting out there. I think if I'd let the scary voice in the back of my head tell me you can't do it, that almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? The whole team's looking at you. They're looking for your confidence, your ability, your belief in them, right? And so seeing a lot of these businesses that have very similar stories at the EY Awards has just really been fantastic. And then the one thing I always say is like, and especially in our industry, you know, you don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun the guy next to you, right? And so I exactly. talk about us being a tech company. I think we're probably the best tech company in the security space. I'm not trying to beat Google, but I am trying to beat the guys in our space. And so if you can bet on yourselves and then also just try to figure out what your competitive differentiator is and then leverage that to the hilt, especially in our space, it's been something that's been very successful.
We've all seen over the last 20 years, the inflow of private equity just in general into the US economy. And that's really been attributed to a lot of the great growth stories. Now, when you look at the security industry, many of your competitors are private equity backed. Maybe they've already been private equity backed and gone public. How have you been able to succeed as a family-owned business and ultimately differentiate yourself?
Yeah. I think first, I'm a huge fan of private equity. I was a transactional attorney at Sullivan & Cromwell in New York. Half our work was private equity work. One of the things I wanted to do when coming into the company was almost treat us more like a private equity investment. You know, let's rationalize cash flows. Let's figure out where we're spending our money. Let's really try to get this down to metrics, exception-driven management. But I think at the same time, you have a very potentially problematic disconnect between management on the one hand and ownership on the other. Again, I mentioned before having to return to LPs.
The timeline. Yeah.
Exactly. And so what we see in our industry right now is a lot of very curious decision making by what I think are actually pretty good business people. If you were to look at the senior leadership of our biggest competitors, I think these are smart, competent, hardworking people, but they're making decisions that don't make any sense from the perspective of many of the clients. Long-term investments in quality, what are they doing on technology? What are they doing to try to be able to scale, to beat back companies like ours that are taking more and more market share? I think the answer actually is because of their ownership structure, that misaligned incentive is causing them to make decisions that don't seem to make sense on their face. They make perfect sense from the perspective of that business person who knows that they're capital constrained or knows that they have to return funds or knows that they need an exit next year. But that causes you to make short-term decisions that clients can see and feel, right? And so biggest player in our space is relatively well-known, has a ton of top line revenue, but they have almost as much debt as revenue. Mm. You're at like 20 times leverage or something.
Wow.
You can't make good decisions in that environment. Sure. Every dollar you have to rationalize. And so I think it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy again.
So is your philosophy to run it at a more modest leverage level to give you the flexibility to do what you want to do?
As part of our banking group, I think you might know that we're probably pretty under-levered. I'm getting a lot of calls on why we should be spending more money than we're spending and acquiring and doing all that stuff. Yes, we have very low leverage. I checked, or something like 1x leverage at the last turn. But that's actually a very strategic decision. You know, we have over $2 billion of bids that we've submitted and are waiting decision on a number of those. We're pretty close to hopefully getting a good outcome. We're typically winning something like 25% of the bids we submit. So I'm looking at that and hoping that we can add another $400 million of revenue to our top line, which is what we've been doing. We've been adding $300 to $400 million a year for the last 4 or 5 years, which is how you get that tripling. And so the reason why we're under-levered right now is I'm really hopeful I'm going to get a very exciting phone call in the next couple of weeks or months. And then our business is a very network and capital intensive business. We have to invest quite a bit in our programs up front. They're good margins over time, but to start a $100 million program, you're putting out something like $25 million of cash just to get yourself to day one, right? And then from there, you have to maintain and all that. And that money comes back at the end of the program, presumably, but you need to have access to it to be able to scale.
Well, it sounds like it's been very strategic growth, not growth for growth's sake.
We have a very specific thesis about who we are and what we're trying to do in our industry. And so if you look at Intercon's history, what my dad's great, you know, idea was to really focus on the federal U.S. government contracting space. And we were actually the first company ever to secure a U.S. embassy on a private basis anywhere in the world. We got the pilot program in Mexico City in 1988 when I was 2. My dad moved our family to Mexico and stood up this private-public partnership where the Marines are doing the security inside and Intercon was doing all the security outside. That became the model for how embassy security is done worldwide. And so we grew to dozens of countries around the world, Intercon security officers working next to the Marines. That's still a huge component of what we do. But all of the growth that we've been focusing on is actually us kind of sensing this opening in the market in the upper end of the commercial space, the United States. And so we've been growing with all of the Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. We're kind of letting the big guys get all of that minimum wage stuff, that low quality, that kind of guards by the pound, mall cop type stuff.
Right.
We don't bid on any of that. We're trying to pay people 25, 30 plus an hour in the United States to be the upper end of the market. Quality works, many of which are armed, securing places that really matter, nuclear facilities, passport right. offices, hospitals, things like that.
Well, you mentioned other posts such as the Port Authority on the East Coast. And we also know that Intercon has and does security for some of the most high profile events, right?
Yep.
And high profile people throughout the country. What does it take for you? Let's look behind the scenes. Okay. So what does it take to plan and execute security at that level? And here's sort of the key. Do it in a way that makes your presence felt only when you want it felt, maybe not seen, maybe not heard. People feel secure, but it's not in their face. How do you do that?
Yeah, I like to say that we're football linemen. You only hear our name called if something bad has happened. And we really want to make sure you've never heard of us, frankly. And so one of the things I'm really proud of is how big we've gotten, despite having quite a bit of anonymity. I think many people do not know who we are. If you were to go walk into a federal facility today, there are folks that look like police, sound like police, feel like police. Don't have Intercon badging on them anywhere, but they're Intercon employees, right? They're actually, in many cases, actually deputized as U.S. Marshals. They have arrest authority. They can actually behave as police officers, but they're private contractors. In reality, this is a heavy question because this is life and death, and we do lose people every year. This is something, you know, around the world where Intercon employees who've given their life in the line of duty, including in relatively high-profile events in the Middle East and things like that, that imagine you're sitting here, you're going to work, it's your job. And it's the livelihood for my family. 40,000 people around the world are putting food on their tables on the back of the work, the mission, the company that we've built together, right? But to actually answer the question, there's that side of it. The way I try to focus on it and the way we are able to accomplish it is actually to try to actively resist the idea that what we're doing is incredibly dramatic or James Bondy or sexy or something like that. What we're doing is highly specialized staffing. These are incredibly hardworking security professionals around the world, but we need to make sure that we as the corporate folks are getting the right person to the right post at the right time, right? We have to pay accurately. We have to bill accurately. We have to do all the things that any staffing agency does. And then we just have to do it with a certain subset of people that are able to do things that frankly, I could never do even if I wanted to.
I want to go back to where we started the conversation, where you mentioned a little bit about family and roots and community, which I know is so important to you. Your family's been a pillar in Los Angeles, in particular in supporting the Hispanic community. What kinds of initiatives did your grandfather and your father prioritize? And then how do you see that evolving and kind of building upon that legacy moving forward?
Yeah, I think I pinch myself. I'm so lucky to have grown up around my father and grandfather and to have been part of this legacy. It's really humbling to see what they've accomplished. And in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm just kind of trying to stand on their shoulders and take the next step for the company and the family. Growing up and just seeing them, all of the charity work they did, not to go through it, but the schools and hospitals, they really spent a lot of time and continue today to give back financially, I guess, on the one hand. But that's, I think, one aspect of it. One of the things my dad talks about, which is almost more important, is leading by example. So kind of, I think as much as it is to give money and get your name on the hospital or something, that's great, right? But to be a visible example, especially for the Hispanic community of, hey, what can happen if you work hard and follow your dreams and bet on yourselves and do all those things, to be able to say, hey, look, this is not only possible, it's happening around you, right? Carrying that forward to today, it's like, yes, we have to do both those things. The company, I think, we're trying to take a more active role. We recently partnered with Verbum Dei High School here in Los Angeles, a bunch of Verbum Dei students who are interning at Intercon, and we're trying to teach them professionalism, what it's like to operate in a business, give them an opportunity to earn some income, help pay for their tuition at their school. And it's just a great partnership. The staff of Verbum Dei has done a fantastic job to get kids who wouldn't otherwise have some of these opportunities access and invisibility into the corporate world.
Wonderful.
Let me brag a little bit about your family, because I think you were maybe understating some of the great leadership roles they've had. Clearly, your grandfather came here. I think your uncle was CEO of Telemundo. Your father was chairman of the board at McDonald's and Nordstrom's.
Yep.
And then maybe he was a board member at Wells Fargo and Chevron.
Yep.
So clearly, leadership runs in the family.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk a little bit about how their leadership styles shaped your leadership style. You know, what have you embraced? What have you done differently as you've grown on this rocket ship over the last decade?
Yeah. The Telemundo story is very cool. If you can imagine, again, my grandfather is coming from effectively nothing and builds this security company that's cash flowing, and he's trying to figure out what to do with the cash. He and my dad and my uncle got together and were able to negotiate with some business people in Mexico. Right, we'd been to Mexico setting up the U.S. embassy. Obviously, the family's comes from Mexico, and we had this opportunity to partner and effectively found Telemundo in the United States. And my dad then managed the security company. My uncle managed Telemundo. And to have this single individual, my grandfather, be in a position to be having this kind of business success is really kind of remarkable. I think growing up with them, business was something we talked about at the kitchen table, right? Seeing the way they behaved and the way they operate in their life, it's about integrity, accountability, risk-taking, believing in yourself, that kind of thing. My dad's and my grandfather, I think in the boardroom, they're very principled, hardworking, stern people. But then, you know, at home, they're actually loving, warm, and incredibly fun people to be around. And seeing you can kind of be both those things is actually one of the things that has taken, you know, home most for me. I really hope that I can do the things I do at work, but then not bring that home to my kids necessarily, right? And so growing this fast, you have some sleepless nights. I know, especially being in the seat, the stress and pressure that my father and grandfather were under, and then having them not bring that home, just an incredible skill and an incredible gift that they were able to give to my family. And so I think there's all elements of that. It's how do you behave professionally? How do you hold yourself out there? And then how do you keep your humanity?
You've emphasized a few times throughout this conversation, the concept of betting on yourselves, both in your personal space.
Absolutely.
In your business world, we're always going to bet on ourselves. I love that.
Yeah, I think that Port Authority example, you know, they had a falling out with the prior provider, and there was a situation where they were in a position where they might not have any security in 14 days. And so Intercon had the opportunity to either take over this program, thousands of people at all of these incredibly sensitive locations in New York City in 14 days, or not get it at all. You can imagine that was a pretty stressful.
You didn't sleep much in those 14 days.
Yeah, you can imagine that was a stressful time. We took the swing and we were fully staffed on day one, right?
Congrats.
And it was amazing. And we are now here years later, fully staffed every single shift since then. And that put us on the map. Hey, these guys can actually do this and accomplish programs like this.
So the risk paid off.
It paid off. I had the belief in the team, and not only did they succeed, but they excelled.
One of the major accomplishments that I'd like to commend you on is your ability to grow outside of the U.S. on a global stage. What's been different about managing growth across multiple regions, multiple countries, often not established democratic countries as well.
Lack of sleep is probably the biggest one. No, it is really hard because you have Europe and Africa are on a very different time frame. Some of these meetings are very early. You've also got late meetings here in the US. And so time is a huge aspect of it. Really, it ends up being a question of how do you structure your team? What are their incentives? How do you manage them, right? And so you got to take fantastic people, give them the resources to be successful, incentivize them to be successful, and then let them cook. But then manage by exception. And so we have weekly meetings. You know, right before I actually had my Africa weekly meeting for the embassies, which is different from commercial. Literally right before I was in the car over here, we were having that meeting. And you're hitting metrics, you're hitting KPIs. Okay, what are the big issues? How can I help you? And then you let the folks on the ground do their job.
So you mentioned the Port Authority as a big win and something that you ultimately took a risk on, you took a swing and you hit a home run. Is there something else that since you become CEO, maybe it's an innovation that you're really proud of that's had a lasting impact on the way Intercon operates or maybe even serves its clients?
Yeah, I mentioned this a little bit before. Our technology, I think by far is best in industry. I showed up to Intercon, like many security companies, this is pen and paper. I looked a little bit like the DMV, is kind of like sclerotic, right? There wasn't a knock on the Intercon team at the time. That's just the way the industry was, right? All the timesheets are pen and paper. And you're basically looking at a timesheet and miraculously, every officer showed up right at 9 and left right at 5. No one was ever late. And don't worry, we're just going to build a client, right? Keeps you awake at night is, unlike many other businesses, I'm not where my employees are, right? I'm relying on the employees to be honest about where they were and what they were doing. And in many cases, the client actually knows more than we do, which is a very bad position to be in because, you know, they're there and they can see if the guard showed up.
Yep.
Our CTO, Brian Faulkner, you know, kind of a friend from outside of Intercon, you know, my prior life as a private equity attorney, had a couple of successful startups in the tech space. And so I called him up and said, hey, how would you like to come over here and partner and try to build, again, what I mentioned before was kind of like the Uber of security. Yep. So our security officers, to be able to clock in, we're entirely paperless. They have what's mostly Intercon provided mobile devices, takes a picture of their face, they put in their code, it tags their GPS, and you can only clock in if you're in the right place at the right time. You can show in real time your clients, hey, look, I can put them up on a map. I can show every single officer across your hundreds of locations in the United States, who they are as they're walking around, what their training qualifications, things like that. And then that allows you to do a bunch of really interesting stuff on the back end when it comes to scheduling. You can automate a ton of scheduling. You can pay your officers on a daily basis instead of making them wait for their payroll every 2 weeks. Drives up retention, drives down turnover. Quality of the program gets better. I talk a lot about our tech internally with our guys because I think that's the huge differentiator for our company. And it really has allowed us not just to put a better program on the ground, but also to scale. We own the tech. We've put tens of millions into it at this point. It's allowing us to put a better product out there and then scale without, you know, we don't have a SaaS model where I'm picking up additional costs for every officer. We have this solid foundation. We're able to leverage it to, you know, tens of thousands of employees.
At the Journal, I think we've actually written a little bit about some of Brian's innovations in the CTO, CIO space throughout the last several years.
Been really fun.
That's impressive.
Yeah. We're going to put a better technology solution into the security space, and then we're going to outcompete.
Your journey to the CEO role you're in now was not a straight line. We talked about this being a family business, but in fact, you started out practicing law. You clerked at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Said you're an M&A attorney at Sullivan & Cromwell. Well, two questions. One, did you consider going into family business right away? And then number two, how did this prepare you to be a different sort of leader for the business today?
The answer to the first question is no, I did not consider it. The plan actually was to not do that. I wanted to become a partner at a law firm. And it was really by necessity that I had to come in, right? The company was just not in the place that it needed to be. And we as a family had to decide to either sell on the one hand or double down. And we decided to double down. I got a life-changing meeting with my grandmother who's since passed and my father to say, hey, look, this is what we think the right answer is. Again, I was 29. Betting on yourself, right? Yeah. I was like, okay, well, this is our best chance. Okay, let's go for it. But I'm very happy we did that. The second, in terms of how did they prepare, it was just fantastic preparation. It was, oh, are you still an attorney? I mean, I'm still an active attorney. I don't really practice day to day. But what you get out of those jobs, those law firm jobs especially, is professionalism, right? They teach you how to be a professional. You're going to put in 100-hour weeks. You're going to get yelled at. You're going to have expectations that in some senses are not attainable. But the really big thing comes out is like, what's your say-do ratio? Of the things that you say you're going to do, what percent of them do you actually do? if at the law firm, if you're less than 100%, you're going to get crushed. Unfortunately, in the security space, especially Intercom, when I got there, the say-do ratio was closer to zero than 100. So how do we build a team of people that take that same level of professionalism and pride in work? And that's been a big differentiator here.
So let's talk culture for another minute here. Over 40,000 employees worldwide. Looking at your time with your teams around the world, is there a moment or a story from out in the field that stayed with you as a reminder of why your work matters so much?
Yeah, not to talk too much about the World Trade Center, but I used to walk through the 9/11 Memorial every day on my way into work. You know, the offices at Sullivan Cromwell are right next to Ground Zero. I was walking out of a meeting a couple of years ago, and there's an Intercon Suburban parked right in front of the tide pools. And it was just really kind of a striking moment. I was just thinking about like my grandfather and my father thinking like, oh my God, someday an Intercon team is going to be securing this location. So there's that. You know, the day that Benghazi got hit, it's been a relatively high profile, terrible security failure, kind of black eye for the United States. Intercon also had a couple embassies get hit that day in what looked like a coordinated attack. I'm very proud, you know, no one got over the walls in our locations. There was some violence and a lot of a scary scenario, but being able to live through that and say, hey, our guys were able to hold the line, so to speak, was a very impressive and gratifying moment for me just as a family member watching Intercon at that time.
Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, your work matters.
Yeah, thank you. There are places in the Middle East that are not safe and to this day are unsafe. And I'm very proud of the team that's out there doing their best to defend America and, you know, abroad.
So you obviously have significant employee count. What is it up to today?
About 40,000, maybe a little bit more, depending on what time of year. It's a little bit seasonal. So
don't you have an app for this that can tell you at any given time?
I can tell you that last week in the U.S., we made payroll for over 20,000 people. When you start factoring in international, it's probably at least another 20. Mexico alone is, I think we're the largest non-U.S.-based Mexico security company, something like 5,000-10,000 employees.
So building a culture with the family-run business as you start to grow, maybe a little bit easier. How do you think about building a culture and managing talent with 40,000 people?
Yeah, it's a hard question, right? Because in a lot of ways, culture always has to start at the top. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about this team of executives that we've convinced to come join this industry. And I know today you have that many employees, even if 1% of people are bad actors, that's still too many, right? Once you start to get to scale. And I also know that given that there are guards who today we probably aren't treating as well as we should. Maybe someone's life changed, their childcare changed, their school changed. You know, what have we been doing proactively to try to find a schedule that works for their life to keep them in the Intercon family? And so my perspective is it's got to be something that's constant gardening. You have to constantly be skeptical of the fact that you're doing a good job. And I think if you're just playing whack-a-mole and constantly trying to attack the low-hanging fruit, you probably actually can build a really good, successful culture in our industry. And I think it's something we've done really well. But it's because you have to be constantly suspicious of the concept that, hey, what can we be doing better?
Give me some specific examples where you think you've been able to make Intercon a place where employees can grow, feel part of a bigger family business.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's big and there's small. And on the big side, we really want to promote from within. So we've been growing so much, a rising tide lifts all boats. You know, Richard Stacks, our chief operating officer, he started as a security officer with Intercon 30 years ago. He's a family member at this point. A lot of our management team, especially the senior ops leaders, are all promotions from within. Okay. It's really gratifying to see folks go from the Marine Corps, the Army, whatever it is, come join our company, stay for decades, and then build lives. So you're putting kids through college and you're seeing people elevate their status in the world, so to speak, all as part of this machine that we've built. That's at the, you know, on the one scale. On the other side, it's for the officers. My dad used to say, I think it's relatively common saying, like, McDonald's isn't the best job in America, but it's the best first job in America. We really want to be the best first job in law enforcement and security. Mm. So we want a lot of people to come. I hope, you know, you spend time with Intercon, we train you, we give you a start down a path. And then you see folks who, you know, I saw the other day, someone came up to me who started a pretty successful tech company in security and says, you know, my first job was Intercon. I put myself through college on the night shift at Intercon, you know, studying books when I was supposed to be watching cameras. Oh God, you know, but that's the, I think that's the culture of gratitude that allows you to be successful.
You've shared some successes and then also some things that you're really proud of. So now I'm going to ask you the flip side. What's been the most challenging?
The family side of this is both in many ways, the most rewarding and the most challenging. Right. So on the one hand, honestly, it's something like saving the family legacy, right? We had a sibling that was on life support. We were growing so fast, we'd run out of capital. what a crazy concept to have. Like, you've successfully built this thing. You have the ability.
You're so successful, you can't be successful.
You're so successful, you can't be successful. You know, we had banking partners at the time that didn't believe in us, unfortunately. And so we had the opportunity, we had the ability, but we didn't have the capital. And so that by far was the most challenging. You know, going through a liquidity crunch while you're doing everything right, just it felt so profoundly unfair. Mm. And I wasn't in control, and there was very little I could do about it. Luckily, we were able to find great banking partners, including PNC, that understood the mission, understood the business case, and have allowed us to take this next step. But that's kind of at the family legacy side. And then you also have the interfamily legacy. You know, it's not just me. This is a team. I have two brothers who are in the business with us. Yeah. My father's still involved. And, you know, trying to be brothers when you're outside the office and coworkers when you're in the office is a very difficult thing. I'm really proud of my brothers. I can only imagine how hard it is to work with and for your brother. And, you know, who's giving me this direct feedback right now? Is it my brother or is it a coworker? And that for me, I think really it's very difficult for the spouses as well. So, you know, everyone talks about family businesses and the individuals, but seeing my mother, seeing my wife, seeing the other wives, you know, invest their whole existence into this family business is really challenging as well, right? I'm very, you know, thankful for them.
Let's take a little bit of a step back. So Los Angeles, more middle market businesses than any city in the country, and honestly, more family-owned businesses than any city in the country. Many of our listeners are executives, maybe with their own family-owned business. What advice would you give them about succession planning, legacy, thinking about the next generation?
Well, that's funny. I think we ended up in a very good place. We had this necessity of having to make very hard decisions in a short period of time and figure out a way to just make it work or else. And I think the one consistent theme among the family was we have to not only save Intercom, but build it into the company that we think it should be. Yep. And so everyone was willing to compromise for that. And so if at the end of the day, the mission is clear and you're all aligned on what it is you're trying to accomplish, I think you're going to get there. But having said that, look, I think there have to be compromises on all sides. I just mentioned the spouses, my sister, who's also involved in the business kind of indirectly. You have to just really like, what is it that people want to do? You know, that's really important, right? It's their life. They also have to be able to make their own decisions for themselves. What gifts do they have that they're able to give? And then also, what needs does the company have? If you put all those together, hopefully you can come to some kind of compromise position where everyone, at least, even if they're not 100% happy, they feel rewarded and gratitude for being part of the joint enterprise.
All right. So we are coming to an end of the conversation today, sadly. Before we go, I want to look ahead. One last question for you, and it's about vision. It's about next chapter. How do you want your legacy to be remembered, both within the company, which I know is so important to you as well, and then externally within the Los Angeles business community? Kind of a deep question, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, it's fun. I've been so underwater building and growing that this is something that I don't think about a lot, because honestly, the day-to-day is like, okay, we got this issue at this location. How are we going to manage it? And I think I've always been very kind of comfortable with anonymity. I think it's a good industry for me in the sense where I kind of like being the football lineman, where I want to be quietly successful. I'm not particularly concerned about my public profile. I'm incredibly proud of the family and the team and the business. If you're asking what I hope people say about me in 20 or 30 years, I hope they'll say that I had integrity, that I worked hard, that I wasn't compromising on my principles. I'm a very competitive guy. I hope they'll say I won. We're out there, we're growing, we're winning. I want that to keep happening. And I'm going to certainly put 100% into that. And I hope people recognize and respect that. I think much more importantly, what I really want is for Intercon to continue the path that it's been on. And I want the team, the people around me and the family to continue to have the opportunity to succeed and live the life that we've been able to live ever since this company came into our family.
Well, Henry, I really want to commend your entire family on what you've accomplished, on the business you built, and you in particular. You stepped in when the business wasn't at its strongest. You put your career on the back burner. You stepped in on behalf of the family with a 100% say-do ratio. You said you were going to come in here, you were going to work hard, and you've accomplished that. You built a great business, a national reach with some of the biggest names in security. So thank you for joining us today. Thank you for sharing your stories, and congratulations on what you've accomplished.
Thank you, guys. What an exciting, very cool thing you're doing here with C-Speak. And listening to some of the other podcasts is just really impressive stories. Like, you know, we're a story in a sea of really cool businesses and family stories all across LA. And you guys putting a spotlight on that's very cool. So thank you guys for doing what you're doing.
Well, you're a story, but one worth hearing. And thank you for sharing it with us. Really appreciate it. It's been really fun today. Your story shows how family values, smart leadership, and then forward-looking mindset, when you mix that with a great company, it's something that can be sustained across generations. It's truly been a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing that with us again. On behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC Bank, thank you all so much for listening to another exciting episode. To ensure that you're notified about our future podcast releases, please be sure to subscribe or follow. Thank you again. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, the language of executives.